from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Tomorrow, we're right back in St. Joe. First padded practice of the 2024 training camp. So we hope to see you up in St. Joe tomorrow. And yeah, like, you actually have a little football, you know, sound tomorrow, and, you know, a little more, I think specifically the offensive lineman and the left tackle spot start to be able to notice that a little bit more, get a notice.
Care more about how that matchup's going.
Yeah. Notice how Felix Anudike Uzama might look and things like that tomorrow. But nice to be back in studio today, but we're right back up there tomorrow.
Yeah. Normal camp stuff. They got to give him a day off before they make him hit each other.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Although Travis was hitting players yesterday anyway. You see, it was a TMZ headline.
Yeah.
I am not kidding. Travis Kelce pushing a player at training camp, which I just want to be very clear. I have seen him do for 10 consecutive years in a row.
Yeah, it's really not that big
Travis
of a deal.
Travis Kelce pushing one player in practice.
Or anybody. Like, I mean, you're...
Became a TMZ headline. It became a TMZ headline because of Travis.
Yeah. I get that part of it. But in general, any team's training camp, there's going to... And there'll be another moment, I'm sure, whether it's with Travis...
There was a full-blown punch thrown in the Texans one yesterday.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think it was Houston. And yesterday, look, it was Kadarius Toney. Look, there's no pads, so nobody should be getting, you know, hit to the ground. And yesterday, Karlaftis, you know, finished off the play against Kadarius.
Toney threw the football at him, and then, you know, some words.
Yeah, the whole sequence is kind of funny. I mean, overall, it means absolutely nothing. But this, yeah, Karlaftis, you know, shoves Toney down to the ground. Toney gets up and just throws the football at Karlaftis. And then Travis comes running up. And then it was Mike Pinnell who joined us yesterday. He was trying to separate Kelce and Karlaftis, who I'm guessing they were jawing a little
Peacemaker.
Bit. And you saw Kelce kind of, you know, shove in the face of Karlaftis. Not a big deal. I don't think anybody's worried about it.
I just don't care.
It's funny to me. I enjoy it. Bring a little more energy and juice to practice, please.
Yeah. Honestly,
next week you guys can expect a lot of that, I bet, because it's going to be hot. And
yeah, it's hot. People are pissed off. They're tired.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got the adrenaline running. They're sick already of just going up against each other. They haven't played a preseason game yet. All that kind of stuff comes into play.
This is also why Andy never does joint practices, because every joint practice inevitably ends in a fight between the two teams. And he'd rather the, like, pushing and shoving and all that stuff just come from his own team, because he knows they'll let it go. Travis Kelce, I can't remember who was it. Steven Nelson that eventually got cut in the middle of it. He's like, stop it. We're not getting better because you keep holding me on a practice play.
Yeah, who
stop
was that?
Stop holding me. I think maybe it was Nelson. And instead, attempt to guard me in a practice. Doesn't matter. Like, if they're working to get better, nobody cares if they get a little snippy.
And he
Travis
doesn't want to sit you
top. Tired.
And he doesn't want a situation where Aaron Donald's ripping guys' helmets off and trying.
Well, you just don't want anybody getting hurt. That's ultimately also why the joint practice thing. Because that, like you said, Cody, there's more restraint when it's your teammate, because you have plenty of other guys around there going to make sure something doesn't happen. Anyway, not a big deal.
Very unimportant.
But it was funny. Yes, TMZ headline.
Speaking of,
what was the headline? Did it say Taylor Swift's boyfriend gets in football fight? What was the headline? God,
you know what? Here, let me pull it up. Because it'd be better if you. I don't want to make it hyper. It was definitely a TMZ headline. And it was like in secret video. I mean,
secret video.
Well, because you know it was a fan video, right? It was. It wasn't. Members of the media were not allowed to have cameras up during that time.
Real credential media, you're not allowed to be filming
Travis
practice.
Kelce shoved one of his teammates during a heated dust-up at Chiefs camp on Wednesday. And the whole incident was caught on video.
TMZ. TMZ. I mean, I'm convinced they have video of everything.
Like good stuff.
They have video of everything. Like, suddenly there could be any of the three of us. If I became famous,
the amount of video they'd have of me somehow.
But not even if you're, that's what I'm saying, what's nuts is, it's not even if you're famous. They somehow just get video of every, it turns into a famous incident. Mm-hmm. You, any of the three of us, okay, not important people, you walk down the street. Somehow something else with a famous person happens next to you, and somehow they have the video of you walking down the street. Like, they can just get it wherever. They have access to any film.
They must just like have security camera footage or something ever. In the article, quote, Taylor Swift's boyfriend got aggressive during 11-on-11 portion of Kansas City's training camp workout. It was like, come on.
And it's just TMZ. We know it's a lot of clickbait, and people do click. People do click. TMZ's around.
I just clicked. I gave them a click on that one.
Did a couple clicks.
The first one was just me reading the headline. I didn't actually click. I only gave him one click, not two. I just like to make that be known.
913-586-7610. That's the Jay Southlands Host Service text line. It's how you can interact with us. We'll get back to the Chiefs here in just a little bit, but we got to start with the Royals, who are in the middle of this homestand. Unfortunately, they end up losing the series to the Diamondbacks, and some of the ground that they gained from the weekend has already come back with the Guardians winning. So they're still occupying the wild card
spot. Although, again, the Red Sox got hammered yesterday.
Yeah, the Rockies destroyed them.
And maybe one of the single greatest on field insults I've ever seen. We don't have to discuss that yet, but just go back and watch the video. Go and see what caused a dust up between the Red Sox and the Rockies yesterday when the Rockies were being, just look at what a Rockies pitcher says coming off the mound.
It was
an accurate statement.
Cal Quantrill or whatever, the pitcher of the Rockies said something to a player for the Red Sox about something that happened 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
A moment in a car.
The story right now with the Royals, it's the bullpen again. It's the bullpen again. Now, there were other issues in the game. The bullpen's getting the attention, but, you know, Salvador Perez, who has helped this team win multiple games this year, last night, look, he didn't hit well with runners in scoring position. I think it was five or six runners left on base with Salvi on the plate. Like, that was part of the problem last night. But we know Salvi's going to bounce back, and you know he's going to help them win multiple games the rest of the season. So the focus is the bullpen, though, where in the ninth inning, James McArthur back in the crosshairs again among Royals fans. His ERA had gone down to like 3.7. He had a stretch since June 1st where he had a 1.72 ERA in 16 games. Nobody was really talking about him. You and I's mentions were not full of people hating on the ninth infantry or anything. And then yesterday was awful. Flat out off. Let's just call it
really
like it is. He was terrible yesterday.
Now he did get robbed. I'm not going to just ignore that. Strike three and the runner was caught and the game was over and they decided to just not call it.
Understand that.
He was still getting hammered.
He let that impact him. Could not get control. Gives up five runs.
Correct.
ERA now is just under five. I mean, just like that, it flips. Looking at the bullpen now, and what has to happen for the rest of the season? I think we already saw a change, though. You know, for those texting in, say, hey, McArthur can't be the closer. I think they already kind of have shifted him out of the highest of highest leverage. Look at last night in the batting order for the Diamondbacks. I know we've always looked at the ninth inning as, well, that's the closer.
But Hunter Harvey was against the tougher hitters.
Hunter Harvey did not pitch the ninth. That is true. That is true. I'm guessing he's going to pitch in the ninth at some point here very soon. But it was about the high leverage, the best hitters, right? Yeah. Of the Diamondbacks, the top of the order, were batting in the eighth inning, right? And Hunter Harvey tightrope that thing, got out without any trouble, after getting himself, I guess, in trouble, got out unscathed. And then in the ninth inning, it was the bottom of the order. And that's where James McArthur couldn't get it done. And so I think we're already seeing Hunter Harvey get the highest leverage
spot.
So the real question, I think, going forward, though, Cody, is so then how should they lay it out? Whether they acquire someone before the deadline or not, how should it, the highest of highest leverage? We want that to be Hunter Harvey. Is that where everybody's at? So then,
it's not exactly been smooth ride there so far.
So who's number two now? Is it
Chris Bubich?
I'm open for the options, but like if it's not McArthur, so is it Bubich? Is it Zerpa? Who do you trust? Who do you trust? Because
so Zerber got an opportunity earlier this year, and they moved him out of high leverage because he wasn't getting the outs. Because
MacArthur's still going to be pitching in leverage situations, maybe not the highest leverage.
And here's the thing: he should be. Look, I understand, because this is what comes sometimes, I think, with pitchers who are still relatively new to the majors, which MacArthur is, right? Like, he's not some seasoned veteran who's been closing his entire career. He is relatively new to it. As you had pointed out, in 10 of his last 11 outings before last night, he'd allowed zero runs, one in the other one. So he'd been nearly perfect for two consecutive months for this team. And I don't think that that should just be ignored because he got hammered last night. I'm not excusing. He got hammered last night. He gave exit velocities in the triple digits like five times. He got his ass kicked.
Yeah, he was terrible.
I'm sure he'd tell you the same thing. He got his ass kicked. Now, I don't think that that means he deserves no leverage because you're remembering him as worse. I think, again, it stands out more with MacArthur. And I think we mentioned this like 2 months ago, like right after we had done the MacArthur's ninth infantry and he'd had a rough outing. And then people just ignored that he was like good for nine consecutive outings after that. But he'd had a rough outing because with MacArthur, when it goes bad, he does not know how to put a fire out.
Yeah, it's not just one run given up.
He gives up like seven somehow.
Yeah,
it's like
it blows up in a big way on him whenever he's not on. And he wasn't.
This would be my choice. Simple. If you gave me a choice right now based on the current constructed bullpen, I would say Harvey pitches the ninth, and I'm between MacArthur and Bubich picking the seventh and eighth, depending on how many lefties are in the lineup. You just want me to be honest. If it's a couple of lefties coming up, congratulations, Chris Bubich. You're the guy who currently has a 0.00 earned run average in the five games he's pitched so far. And if it's the other way around, I'd probably let MacArthur go get the job done.
But isn't this also why they need to go get another bullpen arm before the deadline? And within reason, you know, who that is. I can't remember who it was. I actually pulled up last night. Everybody was following the game and disappointed with how things fell apart on them late in that. It was one of our friends over at Royals Report, Kevin. He tweeted, I see a lot of Royals fans are mad about the closure situation, but I also see people mad about the trade package they gave up for Harvey. And like, if you think that was a lot to get Harvey, so
what do you think it's like
trading for an established closer, what are you giving up? And I was joking. It's like, yeah, I want Mariano Rivera, but I also want to give up a 28-year-old career minor leaguer. Yeah. Like, you can't have both. There's got to be a balance. So
I'd like to give up Austin Nola, please.
I think they still need to go get a bullpen arm. But if you think they're going to go get the most established closer on the trade market, well, then you better be willing to be okay with the Royals, considering their farm system, giving up their number one and now whoever the new number two prospect. I mean, seriously, it would take something like that most likely to get it done. So I want them to get another bullpen arm, but I don't think you're getting the best available bullpen arm on the market. We just saw what it took to get Hunter Harvey, who I think is a nice upgrade for the bullpen, but he's not just going to be perfect. Right? We're not realistic about the situation. Like, there's got to be a balance of recognizing that James MacArthur has really struggled across the season, had a really good stretch, and then last night it blew up on him.
Yep.
But then also balance
out. But if he goes 10 out of the next 11 scoreless, I'm not going to care, I guess.
Well, no, it's just like, okay, so Chris Bubich, right now he's the hot name everybody wants, and this point,
Sam Long, because he pitched well last night.
He's been really good. But you guys think Chris Bubich should just go on the rest of the season without having a blow up in the ninth inning or two? Like, it's just not reality. So we have to be honest about the situation and the warts that exist still in the bullpen.
I think what the truth is about this bullpen, and I think we all know it, we just don't want to admit it necessarily, is like, you want them to be Cleveland's bullpen. I get it. So do I.
That's the best in baseball.
That sounds awesome. I'm very interested. They're all kind of the same. Harvey, Long, MacArthur, Bubich, unless Bubich just keeps pitching like this as time goes on, then maybe he can put himself in a different category. They are, with flaws, relievers. Okay, they just are. And that's okay. You can get by most of a bullpen that way and move on with your lives. And like, it will not be the most dominant bullpen come postseason time. And I think that sometimes it's hard for Royals fans, and I don't blame them, because we talked about this with the Chiefs once. The last time, or even with the Royals like a week ago, the last time you watched the Royals win, how do they win? And they're not winning that way. And you're like, I don't like it. But their starting rotation is so much better than in 14 or 15. Like, that's how they're going to win the games. Like, funny enough, they lost the game in the ninth. I understand they were up 5-4. But part of the problem was, like, Walker wasn't quite as good as he normally is and got pulled in the fifth inning.
And they left runners on base.
And they had to, they ran into two double plays early in the game when they had two runners on. And then when Walker got pulled out in the fifth, that means they had to go four plus innings out of an average bullpen, which is too much to ask out of this bullpen most commonly. And so, like, There's other times in which that game last night went weird. If you're making me choose the bullpen order, sure. I'll let Harvey pitch the ninth. I'll let, you know, like I said, Bubich pitch the eighth, or Long pitch the seventh, or MacArthur pitch the seventh or the eighth. I think you're just kind of like moving chairs around. I don't think it fundamentally is going to improve the performance of the bullpen.
It's not even so much the innings, though. As again, last night was the example. It basically, you almost have to go with who do you trust the most in terms of leverage. It's not even so much as the simplified ninth inning, eighth inning. I get what you're saying, but like we saw that play out last night. I mean, people old school maybe don't like it. You know, you always hate the closer is pitching in the ninth. But if the top of the order, if the Royals are fortunate enough to in early September be playing the Guardians, or they're going to, and it, you know, they're hopefully,
and they're going to face distance. Kwan and Ramirez, I'd rather have their best reliever in the seventh.
Correct.
Even if it's eight.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's how they're going to approach it, and they did last night. It still backfired. It doesn't mean this is foolproof plan. Like, it's still baseball, right? Things are going to happen. The Royals are a flawed team. They're having a really good season, but they're still flawed. We all know this. I'm curious if last night changes anything for the trade deadline, but this conversation we're having right now about whether it's MacArthur or it's the same conversation we've been having all year. Like, not like last night, and maybe that's why it's more frustrating for some. This whole thing is the same exact conversation we've had. Like, we can pull up the audio, we can pull up old tweets, like whether it was May 15th, June 15th, or July 25th. The notion of, like, do you trust this guy or that guy? And do they have enough of the bullpen?
Spot.
It's the same thing. The only thing that can change that is adding another arm to make you feel a little bit better. But there is not someone, in my opinion, they're going to go trade for by the deadline that's going to come in and you're just going to be like, all right, now we've got our lockdown guy. There's no issues anymore. Like, that just doesn't exist. That's not like something that they're going to be able to fix this season.
MacArthur's ERA was at like 5.5. And then because it was bad, because he'd had those, like, the same thing, right? These big blow up innings. He got all the way down to sub-4 because since June 1st, before last night, 16 games, 15 and 2/3 innings, and a 1.72 ERA. But he doesn't strike anybody out.
Isn't that just life of being
as a closer? Because you can be great for almost two consecutive months from a 1.72 ERA and then just let it get kicked in the face last night.
He's the one actually pitching, but even just as two people or three of us on the show who obviously had some fun with the ninth infantry movement, I can just tell you based off of even as simple as Twitter, how brutal it must be for him actually having to go out and do it, because our mentions were dead quiet for 5 weeks about MacArthur. Dead quiet. Last night, he blows up, and it was full of people saying the guy sucks and how stupid we are for supporting him. So it's kind of, I mean, it just tells you how it is. I guess that's life of being a closer in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's probably the best. I will say, back on the football end, you and I talk a lot about expectations sometimes, and I tend to be the person who's like, calm down, relax a little bit, because I got to like field text from the text line that are like, Hollywood Brown's going to have 1,500 yards and 92 touchdowns this year. I'm like, chill. That's not what the season
sounds about right for me. I think that's right.
You know, relax a little. There's a player that I actually think we're underselling. Why aren't we putting more pressure on Rashee Rice to be a bigger statistical player this year? A lot of what I see out of Rashee Rice is everyone seems like they just be cool. If Rashee Rice is exactly the wide receiver he was last year, in almost any other circumstance, if you had a nearly 900-yard rookie wide receiver in his rookie year with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, you would be in year two anticipating the big jump. The jump of he's a 1,200-yard receiver. That's honestly where I'm going to set the sights for him. I think he needs to develop. If he plays the full season, which I told you now I think is going to be the case, because I'm starting to think the suspension is a 2025 problem. If he plays the full season this year, he needs to be a 1,200-yard wide receiver. He needs to take that step forward into the next leap. I know there's more competition at wide receiver than there was last year, but it's not like they didn't just bring in Tyreek Hill back or some other number one guy to eat up all the things. Hollywood Brown's only gotten number one target share maybe once in his career. He shouldn't eat up all your snaps. And as far as I'm concerned, Rashee Rice should be more of the innings eater, if that makes sense. He should have 92 catches for 1,200 yards when maybe Hollywood Brown has 71 for 900, whatever it is. And that should be his role. I don't think we're putting enough on Rashee Rice. I think he should have more expectations.
There's a couple reasons for it. One is still a lot of people are hesitant because we don't know about the suspension, right? And I'm with you. We've talked about
it. So they don't want to put a number on it.
And it's hard. You know, so people are like, well, how am I supposed to put a number if I don't even know how many games the guy is playing? I wonder if some people were sour just because of the offseason, right? And just how people, the reality of how people view somebody after the offseason they had. And so people just aren't talking about it in as much of a positive way as we would if someone had a completely clean offseason. I think that might be part of the reality. reality with it. The other thing is just that, you know, last year, you're right. I mean, you didn't see him have the full role until week 7 or 8 when they were forced to do it. And so you're saying, well, then if he's starting that way for 17 games, why wouldn't the production increase? So I get the logic. I think it's a combination of the potential suspension and the whole dirty offseason, if you will. And then also recognizing how people viewed him last year and what his ceiling is. Now, maybe the ceiling you think is higher. Was he just the beneficiary of, hey, they had nobody else in the wide receiver room. And now you look
at about that bad receiver on a bad team, but like, he was still on a good team.
But you have, you know, Travis Kelce, who, knock on wood right now, looks like he'll, you know, maybe be healthy heading into a season. He wasn't last year. Then if you have a deep threat, that should make life easier for Rice and Kelce. But if they have the opportunity to take the deep ball a little bit, is there just more big, deep pass attempts?
In a weird way, that should help his numbers, in my opinion.
Well, it should make it easier underneath. But if the offense has the deep shots, he's not going to be the guy they're taking the 60-yard pass to. You know what I mean? He's not going to be that guy. He's going to be hopefully the consistent, hey, it's 3rd and 8. I need to trust somebody that's going to get me my 10 yards on this play underneath. You know, mesh routes, you know, whatever, like that.
Run and catch.
You know, that, yeah, runs that yards after the catch. That's Rice more than, you know, if you're thinking you're getting 60-plus yard touchdowns, those are going to be, if you get them, that's going to be worthy in Rice.
Brown. I still think his number is going to be there, Gold is. Like, I think in a dream scenario, like, all right, Chiefs beat the hell out of Cincinnati, right? Week 2 of the season, and the offense was humming. I think the offense is humming looks like this. Xavier Worthy had 2 catches for 41 yards. One was like 31 yards, and he got one other one in there. Hollywood Brown had 4 catches for 71, and Rashee Rice had 8 for 90. You know? Like, I feel like he's the volume monster. That's why I feel like the large catch, large yardage, good touchdown numbers make a lot of sense for him in year 2.
I think that too, he's more likely to get, I think, the most targets than he is the most yards, or and maybe you just combine them together as well. He's more likely to get the most yards because he's getting thrown the ball more. Because I think, you know, to Gold's point, Rashee's going to be the guy that has maybe, I don't know if it's an 8 for 90. It might be an 8 for 67. And then Hollywood Brown has 5 for 85 because he has 1 long touchdown. Like, Hollywood might, like, I think they're both going to have very similar outputs where they're both in that 1,000-yard range. And I think that there should be an expectation for Rashee if he is.
For growth.
If he's not suspended and we're going to play that game, I think the expectation should be at minimum 1,000 yards just because everybody around him is better. Like, yeah, he should have that expectation. Hollywood should have that expectation where if you can have 2,000-yard guys, they don't even have to be 1,100. 2,000-yard guys.
3,000-yard guys with Kelce, too. If you're talking I'm just saying that's, yeah, it's not hard to say 3,000-yard guys at that point. And we've talked about how few times that's happened in history.
Yeah, select few. And look, I don't think it's unfair at all. And I would put, you know, this was crazy because it gets you into the 3,000-yard receiver territory. But I think asking Rice to have 1,000 yards is definitely not crazy. I mean, he was only 70 yards away last year. But I would put Rice in that 900 to 1,100-yard range this season, assuming he's not missing half the year. Kelce, I would put in the 900 to 1,000 to 1,100-yard range. And I would put Hollywood Brown in that, like, 850 or 800 to 1,000-yard range. Like, so you can say that, yes, high. If they all reach the high watermark, then, yes, it's 3 1,000-yard seasons for one of the rare times in NFL history. But otherwise, I think if we're realistic, okay, Kelce gets just over 1,000. Rice maybe is, like, 980. Hollywood Brown is 875. I think that works, too. You know, I think that those are all realistic. I don't think none of those numbers are all that crazy. Now, if I try to convince you that Hollywood Brown's going to have 1,300 yards, you can start saying, okay, come on. And I'm very bullish on Hollywood Brown, but me being bullish is that top end, he's at 1,150 this year. Like, if everything went perfect.
Somebody mentions the red zone, you know, it doesn't matter how many yards I want him to score touchdowns.
Sure.
Do you think,
ideally,
you would think that this is going to make it easier for them to, they don't have to say, well, we got to throw it to Travis or we got to throw it to Rashee because they're all we can trust. Does it, like, is there anybody who can label it? Does it make it easier on Mahomes to spread the, because in the red zone, obviously, there's less room to work with. It's, yeah, not like,
they,
you know,
they got, if you're, plenty. I mean, if you just look at the
there's
roster,
enough weapons for sure, but
yeah, I mean, they
shouldn't have any red zone
whether
problems.
It's the creativity of Andy Reid, but just think about all the different, I mean, if everybody's healthy at a given time, Kelce, we know what he's capable of in the red zone. Wiley could end up being a little bit of a factor in the red zone. I think more of a red zone factor than anywhere else on the field as the number 3 tight end.
Yes.
Worthy, you know, whether it's trick plays or whatever, Worthy. Mecole Hardman fits in that category as well. Let's not forget, you know, that Rashee Rice in in the red zone last year, you know, because he's a bigger bodied wide receiver. He's a threat. I mean, there's six.
I don't know if you mentioned Pacheco already, but Pacheco being a guy.
There's six plus guys I think you could actually have to worry about in the red zone if you're a opponent.
So there's no, not that there was last year, but there's no excuse for them to be as poor as they were.
No.
In the red zone, there's none.
Red zone is a little bit like touchdowns are an inconsistent stat just in the
for
NFL.
Individual players, not for a team.
Typically, you're supposed to score down there.
Yeah, it's tough for players like to say that this guy's going to have eight touchdowns because yes, that can deviate. But the team with what they have on paper heading into a season,
red zone shouldn't
be a problem. Although we said that this time last year, we did. I do think they are better.
We were wrong though. Like we misevaluated as a unit. Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore.
No doubt. No question.
I was never particularly high on them, but I was still higher on the offense. So clearly I was wrong in general, too.
If there's an issue or two, I mean, there will be some player that everybody was way too high on that ends up not having a good year if things were to go wrong. But what's going wrong is this is what the challenge will be, I'll admit,
their floor as, we're watching
the season play out. Like, what's going wrong? Like, last year, things went wrong. They won the Super Bowl. So, like,
even Mahomes admitted that it was a frustrating year. Yeah, like, it's still bored into his head.
Yeah, they did not have fun in the regular season, all that. But I'm just saying, like, as we evaluate the year, if we're sitting here and it's November 10th, and they've had three straight games where, like, pick whatever it is, either a defensive struggle or an offensive struggle or a certain area, it's just going to be so hard for anybody to convince me at that point in time, admittedly, that, oh, man, well, they're just not good. If they can't do that, there's just no way they can win the Super Bowl. Like, I'm sorry. Like, there's
almost never going to say the second part of that sentence ever.
Like, I mean, because other than your quarterback just not being available anymore, I don't think you can convince me in this current regime and era in November that, man, you know, watch them play, man. Watch them play. They just can't figure it out. They're not going to be able to win the Super Bowl doing this. I'll call BS on that every single time right now. Like, it's just not a conversation you can have.
They can't win it this year. Like, grow up.
Sure.
Last year, we heard that sentence a lot with this team because of their offense. It did not matter.
Mm-hmm.
They won the Super Bowl, turns out.
They did. They
probably
did.
Win it again this year. I'm going to predict them to win it again this year. I was like,
of course.
As a heads up. Yeah. When it comes to prediction time, and we did this last year. I predicted him to win, and so did you, their second straight Super Bowl. I'm like, look, maybe it's just playing the favorites here, but I'm just going to go with what's the most likely scenario.
I won't say his name.
I love it. Man. I love it. Just add more spice to it. Jamar Chase.
For that yesterday.
Just love it. So salty, but it's fun. It's great. And now Chiefs fans hate your Cincinnati Bengals, Drew, even more after Jamar Chase's comments. It is fun.
It's rivalry in the NFL right now.
This is why it's an actual rivalry, not Chiefs and Bills, because there is legitimate hate and pettiness all the way around. So we'll talk more about that.
Absolutely.
We got to get to a break. But up next, one player that, if he improves, especially to start the season, it could mean great things for this football team. We'll get through this confidence scale for this player next on Cody and Gold.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
This is Joe Burrow rapping. You didn't know this?
Yeah, I figured that's what that was. I thought that was you. I'm still waiting for you to walk in with bleach blonde hair and wear that same salmon colored shirt or pink shirt, whatever that was.
Oh, yeah, that was an interesting shirt color with the hair as well.
Look, I'll be honest. Patrick Mahomes, because Grim Reaper had a chance to be a cool nickname. He does not have a cool nickname. Like, whatever the ones, Showtime, not a cool nickname, okay? Like, it already existed for a team.
I mean, it'll be pretty cool when GOAT is his nickname here pretty soon. Fine, that'll be pretty cool.
But Shiesty stinks.
What?
Joe Shiesty.
Terrible nickname.
Joe Shiesty.
Joe Burr.
It's
Come
not,
on
now. That's better, but it's not, Joe Shiesty is not good.
Yes, it is.
They gotta ditch that nickname. It's no good.
Slim Shiesty now is what I saw on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, I think their official Twitter account put that out. That just needs some work. That's
the Bengals social media game has gotten so much better the last couple of years. So much better.
I think everybody's stepped up.
Yeah, I think everyone decided you're allowed to have a personality on those Twitter accounts.
It was about as bad as what everybody says the ownership is for the Bengals. That's how bad the social media was.
Pretty bleak, huh? I wasn't following their social media.
It's so much better.
I realize they have a star player. They might want to, you know, promote said player. And have some fun with it.
Actually, take advantage of that.
And that's what Cincy's doing. We were talking about the Chiefs and Rashee Rice in particular, and where his season could end up depending on the length of if a suspension even happens in 2025. One other player that I think can swing things quite a bit, if you consider that on the left side of your line, you might be starting a rookie in Kingsley or a second year guy in Wanye Morris, who's only played in four games. Well, then you want stability on the right side. And we know Jawan Taylor has spoken about the adjustments he's made in the offseason. We all know he kind of had this target on his back the first month plus of the season.
Yes.
And it was a mess. It really was. But then we didn't really talk about him, which is a good thing if you're a right tackle in the NFL. We didn't talk about him much from about week 12 on. You really didn't notice him. That's what it's supposed to be. Just solid play, not getting called for holding, not lining up wrong, all that kind of stuff. And so when you look at Jawan Taylor, how confident are you that that is fixed, basically? Because if he can...
Or that he can be, like, league average? Is that pretty much what I'm asking? Like, the 15th best right tackle?
Because if he can elevate his game into where we're not beginning, like, he has a full offseason, he could be even more... I think he has a chance he could be more effective because he was asked to make an adjustment mid-season. I imagine that's very difficult to do as a right tackle. Mid-season...
When you spent your entire career playing a certain way?
Exactly. Now you have the offseason... Change the way you need to play to line up properly and not jump early and all that kind of stuff. So you would think that should allow him to just go out and be more of the force that he is versus worrying about the other stuff. So I think there is a leap potentially here for Jawan. They need to, especially since his contract for next year already became guaranteed essentially on March of this year. So he's not leaving next year either. So they need this to happen. And if you can get stability at right tackle, then it allows you maybe a little bit more of the learning curve and the growing pains that could exist with Kingsley or even Wanya.
And likely will, if we're being honest. Look, I'm probably, like, if you made me do it on a 1 to 10 scale, I'm probably like a 6, which is probably better than I was about week 5 last year when it seemed like the point of emphasis was to get Jawan Taylor. Here's why I'm tempted to be a little bit higher than that, I'll tell you, is that typically in these league circles, the point of emphasis stuff, year to year, that was the point of emphasis last year because Chris Collinsworth made it so. And the league sent out these videos essentially just showing you what Jawan Taylor was doing wrong. And so he got picked on for the better half of a season. And they picked on other players in the league, not just him, who were doing the same thing. And it became a point of emphasis. They'll just decide something else this year. It'll be like the way people hand check at the line or pressing off of the line or holding in certain situations. So just as long as they're not like as focused on it, I'd buy me be closer to a 7. He is an okay right tackle. I don't think he's a world beater. I mean, I've gotten a pretty good look at Jawan Taylor at this point, and if you look at the metrics or the stats coming out of Jacksonville, he wasn't a world beater there either. But I think he is a capable or more than capable right tackle, especially with Patrick Mahomes. So confident that he could be that? Maybe an 8 or 9. Confident that all of his users are behind him? 6 or 7, probably depending on my mood that day. But I don't think he's going to be a complete liability. There were times last year he had kind of become that, right?
Oh, no question. I mean, the first month plus of the season, he was.
Because he's the most penalized player in the league, or at least at the offensive line.
He was. And so, yeah, there was definitely the liability of having him out there at one point. But that was not the case. Again, we really didn't talk about him, man, in the playoffs. Did we mention him once? I honestly don't remember. Do we have a conversation during the playoff run while we were in Vegas Radio Row Week? Did we mention Jawan Taylor's name?
No.
And that's a good thing, by the way. That's a good thing. You don't want to be mentioning anybody on the offensive line.
Maybe a little bit because we're talking about how good that defensive line is for the 49ers. But I think it was more like a unit, not him specifically.
But not in terms of how he had been performing or anything like that. Heck, we talked about Creed Humphrey more during the playoffs because the snapping became an issue.
Yeah. And that was an issue for the second half of the season. And look, I think if you're asking, and because that's funny, because it's like, how confident are you those issues are behind Creed Humphrey? I was like, I don't know, 9? Like he spent, because it's the opposite of the Jawan Taylor thing. They really were asking Jawan Taylor to play a different style of tackle than he had played at any point in his career. All I'm asking Creed Humphrey to do is what he's done the other 1,000 plus games he's played in football, in college or high school or the pros. Like, he snapped the ball successfully for years and then got the yips, is what I'm convinced took place there. And I honestly think that's part of what happened with Jawan Taylor. I think it got so in his head, it was being exacerbated because of that.
Yeah, I was looking just for Taylor. So he did not have a penalty in the Super Bowl, from what I can see. He had one penalty against Baltimore. He had one penalty, illegal use of hands against Buffalo divisional round. He had two in the wild card round, illegal block and a false start. There was
I can't remember which one of those games. Now I can't even remember. But one of those was bogus. The block in the back, I think, or whatever, was a bogus one.
If you compare, though, early in the year, so in September, so the opener against Detroit, he had the one false start, and then they highlighted it, right? And then in week two, he had the one false start against Jacksonville. He had the illegal formation against Jacksonville. He had the holding against Jacksonville. He had the holding against Jacksonville. He had the false start against Jacksonville. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 penalties. Remember, they pulled him out for a drive because he was so frustrated. They pulled him out for a drive. People didn't like when I said he got benched. They pulled him out, got benched, whatever phrase you want to use. He was not playing for a drive.
Which is uncommon because he normally plays every drive.
It wasn't until there was a gap from October 12th to November 20th where he didn't have a penalty. It was that's when he cleaned stuff up. And there was a bye in there as well. So about a 3-week stretch where he kind of cleaned stuff up and then he was a different player.
Yes. After that moment, and of course the bye probably helps, he was still a penalized player because I'll tell you this. He's just not a perfect tackle. He sometimes holds. He sometimes does it because he is not a perfect right tackle. But I've told you this before. I think Patrick Mahomes can help cover some of those things up for you. And if you're Jawan Taylor, you'll probably learn that. Orlando Brown Jr., when he left town, he got asked a little bit about Patrick Mahomes and what it was like to block for him. And he openly admitted what I am saying, which is he makes you look better. Patrick Mahomes will cover up some of the times you got beat. And so if you're Jawan Taylor, sometimes if you think you're going to get beat, you can still just get beat rather than take the penalty because Mahomes might cover up that mistake for you. Not every time, but there's a little more flexibility in there than you're willing to admit.
It seems like a lot. I know we just talked about General MacArthur. There's a lot. It seemed like there were a lot of conversations around that with offensive linemen as well. Everybody was talking about it when he was messing up. He wasn't, and nobody was talking about him. And then the one time when he would come up during the playoffs, whatever it was, hey, well, Jawan Taylor's been having struggles all year long. Like, it came up again as, and maybe not from Chiefs fans necessarily, but from, like, broadcasters, it was, well, he did have that one game early on in the year and had the yips, and it's been a constant thing all year with his alignment when it really hasn't. It hadn't been all year long.
Yeah, I think he's going to be better. I mean, this we can mention what he was in Jacksonville, and that was what was frustrating last year when the target was on his back early. So he had 20 penalties last year in Kansas City. The year before in Jacksonville, he only had 6 penalties. He had 6. He had 11 in 2021 and 6 in 2020. So it's not like he was having 15, 20 penalties a year. He had 6 penalties the year before he came to Kansas City.
Yeah.
So that's why I think there is definitely room and he will have a much better season. And that should hopefully help the growing pains that likely are going to exist on the left side, no matter who the starter is.
Why did that even become an issue anyways? Is it just because he was on the Chiefs and his alignment was...
It was a Sunday Night Football broadcast.
Chris Collinsworth. Thursday night opener against Detroit kept highlighting over and over how he was lining up improperly or doing, you know, he was like, he was jumping back quick or whatever it was, you know, so whatever. Yes. And that, and then the rest of, and that's why I said in week two or three, that Jacksonville game, he had five penalties and they had to pull him out of the game because he got so frustrated about it.
But is that seemed to be a, he's on the Chiefs team because as you just said, we looked back and he's been doing that his whole career.
Trent Williams does it. Right now, right, like actively does it.
It was a he's on the Chiefs thing. That's why it got blown
he's
up.
He's on the Chiefs, and Collinsworth like pointed out.
It was a standalone
out, and
game for the first
and
game.
The same thing's going to happen this year. They're going to be on the standalone Thursday night game against Baltimore, and we'll see if Chris Collinsworth points something else out that all of a sudden becomes a problem. Hopefully not.
Be cool, Chris Collinsworth. Don't cause problems. Point out something that the Ravens are doing wrong. Talk about some like illegal shift they're doing in order to run the ball well. I don't care. Just keep the Chiefs name in your mouth on this one. It was right. I mean, they sent a league-wide video the next week being like improper offensive line
play. Huge story. It was,
and the entire highlight reel that got leaked at that time, it was like four plays from Jawan Taylor on it. They were targeting the guy. There's just no way to look at it any other way. I'll just be honest.
One thing we didn't get to yesterday at camp as the schedule kind of moved around on us a little bit, we were talking about the defensive line and the confidence of the group that they currently have. And there was one move that happened in the NFL recently, a signing that I wonder if it makes you feel better about the defensive line unit just because they didn't feel the need to go acquire certain players. So Emmanuel Ogba, former Chief, he's had a really nice career. He's played very well in Miami.
Yep.
He was a free agent. And now he's at more the twilight of his career, I think it's fair to say. 2.5 sacks last year. So he was out there. And then this week, the Dolphins brought back Emmanuel Ogba. But there was a report that the Chiefs had at least discussed with his agent of Ogba coming back. And I thought that was interesting. We don't know the timing of it. Did they recently try to bring him back? Or was this, oh, they talked to him back in March. And they've since brought back, you know, Dana and Pinnell and Turk Warden and so whatever. But the fact that they reached out to him and didn't bring him back, and the Chiefs, of course, are a contender, and maybe Miami's offering more playing time. There's so many factors. But does that make you feel better about how they feel with who is in-house? I think it tells me a lot how they believe in Aminihu coming off of an ACL injury. When he returns, probably end of October, when he's back, that they're confident he can be that. Remember how good he was playing last year. He's ACL. It's always a little bit of a wild card, but he's been constantly sending out all these videos. And
boy, if you're to believe Aminihu, he might be able to play tomorrow. He has sent out some serious hype video stuff.
Yeah, well, and he's been making sure people, you know, he's been talking. Whatever. Hey, you got to find ways to motivate yourself. So I don't, you know, he's been tweeting out like people are doubting me. Whatever he needs to do to get his mind that people are doubting him, and he's going to, that works for the Chiefs. I think, though, that they didn't bring back Emmanuel Ogba tells me, or try to bring back Ogba tells me they feel good about not only Charles Aminihu, what he'll be after the injury, but also maybe a little bit of development from Felix Anudike Uzama.
Yeah, I think it depends on if you're feeling like being an optimist or a pessimist in the day, right? Because the pessimist would say they don't like the defensive line enough and they were searching for depth options. But if I look at this defensive line, they are plenty deep. Ogbo, to me, would only be related to two players, Charles Aminihu or Felix Anudike Uzama. Because then if it's not for those two players, we can talk about Felix in a little bit, your depth then would be covered. And so I think it was probably more about Aminihu and offering themselves protections from Aminihu. And when they started weighing pros and cons over, and look, Ogbo was cheap, dirt cheap. If guys who had 5.5 sacks, which is what he had last year, actually, nose tackle, 5.5 sacks last year, if those guys are on the street for $4 million, I almost feel like you should call every time. Because it doesn't speak badly of your defensive line that 5-sack players are on the street for cheap. They paid for 5-sack players. They paid for Dana. They've brought in Turk Wharton back. They've brought in some of these players through that are in that range. Kicking the tires on Ogba doesn't bother me if that's the case. I am actually somewhat optimistic.
You spent a premium pick a year ago on a young developmental player in Felix Anudike Uzama. So, you know, it makes sense that you don't have to go and sign another free agent lineman. So I think some of it is, but you got to play the guy a little bit more, first of all, and hopefully he has progressed a little bit. We had Mike Pinnell on the show, Drew, yesterday, and he talked about Felix Anudike Uzama's development.
Absolutely. I mean, with Felix, as you know, in the NFL, the most important jump for a player is from year one to year two. And I mean, if you guys seen it out there today, that guy is winning. He's winning at a more consistent level. His confidence is up. He got a better grasp on the playbook. He's understanding what he's able to do as a pass rusher, and he's excelling at those things. And I mean, he got vets that's just staying in his ear. Me, Mike, George, Chris, keeping his confidence up with his pass rush, and is really like showing on the field. Really, really proud of his development right now.
And we can talk again more about maybe what his play is going to look like and what the expectations are. But yeah, I think that the Ogba thing was just normal NFL kicking the tires. I think Minshew come back fine.
I think when they reached out does matter a little bit for the conversation, because if it was 2 weeks ago, then you could maybe argue the opposite. I understand that Felix, you know, is the, you know, yeah, he's a D-line guy and Pinnell is going to put him. I think he believes that he's developed well, but he's also not going to, you know, bash him.
But
I wonder if you are if they reached out to Ogba 2 weeks ago, do they really are they really that confident in Felix feeling the need to add another defensive lineman? Because that was part of the conversation anyways, is they brought everybody back. Does that mean that they don't feel some way about Felix, which I disagree with? But I think that it depends on when they reached out to him. If it was before they brought back Dana and everybody, then that's fine. But if they reached out 2 weeks ago, I wonder if Felix is progressing as much as they want him to.
This is where history can teach us something. Last year, the Chiefs had the second most sacks in the NFL from their defense, and the year before they had the second most sacks in the NFL from their defense. Last year, they still added Danny Shelton and a couple of other, you know, the last 2 years, they've added some random defensive line player in camp goal two consecutive years. Did it really say the defensive line couldn't play? No, I think they are learning. They're figuring out, and they'll have to figure it out slowly through the draft. They're learning what a lot of really good defenses have learned over time, which is you cannot have too many quality defensive linemen. Just plain and simple. You can always improve the back end of your defensive line 100% of the time, every time, no questions asked. That's why they went after Pinnell later in the year, even though they were going through, you know, like defensive line players, Ogbas, those guys are available for a reason, but also like they do not hurt the back end.
If you continue to add those guys, though, doesn't it take away from the opportunities for Felix to really get those reps?
Absolutely. No, that is more than fair. It does. Now, why does Ogba choose Miami? More playing time. Pretty simple, I think. Barrett decided to retire. The Dolphins thought they had Shaq Barrett. He just retired 4 days ago.
Said Wilds just likes to retire.
They got a couple players that are on the pup list. So probably more of an opportunity for Ogba to sign a one-year deal. He's 30 years old in Miami. And maybe he gets another nice sack season and he gets a multi-year deal somewhere else
one
a year
time.
From now or something like that. So I think that's maybe ultimately why he went. I get your point, Drew, where it's like, hey, if they were poking around, higher end-ish defensive linemen, does that mean the opposite of what we're saying? Perhaps. Yeah, there's a chance for that. So if another team cuts somebody during camp, does that mean they're interested in bringing him in? But at some point, the snaps are hard to come by. I mean, we mentioned last year, other than just being a developmental season for Felix, at some point, like you're going last year, you're going for back to back. This year, you're going for a three-peat. You have to play the best players. There's no, we'll just let them figure it out. No, the other guy, Malik Herring, Turk Ward, and these other players, they were simply better than him. They needed the best players on the field. And so they couldn't afford, maybe if it was a team that had 3 wins all year, they would have given Felix more playing time. The Chiefs were going for back to back. This year, the Chiefs are going for a three-peat. So we'll see what the playing status is. It's been, a quiet camp. There haven't been a ton of media attention around Felix at this point. They haven't put on pads yet, but you heard from Mike Pinnell talking a little bit about
that. Was why I think it was good for them to bring everybody back, because it allows Felix, if he needs it, more time to continue to develop, or if he jumps Pinnell, or he's impactful enough, he jumps Dana, then obviously what you were expecting when you drafted him is
what you want.
Is coming to fruition now. But this wasn't a conversation, I don't think, until like the Ogba stuff came up, where yes, it would be good, but if they're looking at adding Ogba on top of bringing everybody else back, what does that mean?
I think just another rotation.
Everything points to Felix, though, because he was the odd man out last year.
And if we're looking on the negative end, it would be an insurance policy if Charles or Minshew's not the same guy. Versus on the flip side, we're saying, maybe it's a good sign. Maybe it's the opposite, that they're worried about
safety net.
You know, you can never have enough pass rushers.
That's
on your
what
team.
You really can't, though. That's not like an exaggeration. You can't have too many good defensive linemen, because the truth is, the amount of snaps someone like Ogba would take away is minuscule, because essentially the way defensive line rotations work under the Chiefs is there's like two guys that'll get 70% of the snaps. They're George Karloftis and Chris Jones, and everyone else will get like 42% in a complete rotation with each other. You know, some will get 51, some will get 31, but it's like they'll all get like 40 to 45%. And so like he'd just be a part of that. He would just be on the low end of that. He'd be one of the 20% guy versus the 60. It's like they've continued those rotations, I would say, pretty consistently. Look, Pinnell's comments give me some hope that Felix has gotten better. He's also not like over gushing about him. He's not out here being like, the guy's a monster. He's an unstoppable force. So like when I hear Pinnell talk about it, I feel good about Felix. And I hope that he's right, that he's winning more than he was last year. That's all you really
want. To that point though, I guess for it being year two for a first round pick, what are you expecting for like if he plays 30% of the snaps, is that a problem? Should he
it's
be
not good
more?
Enough, in my opinion, but I'd probably, at this point, I'd probably just settle for 4 sacks if they were on the table.
So last year, just for reference, snap-wise, just percentage, we know early while Minnehue was out, Felix, so week one, Felix last year played 27%, then 24 in week two, jumped up to 50% in week three. There was an injury or something happened there. 35% week five, and then nosedive. 10%, 13, 6%, 13, 5, 3, 8, 9, 7, 5, and then 73% week 18 when the starters
were resting. And then he was inactive, essentially, for the playoffs.
Yeah, and then in the Super Bowl, he had one very nice play. Right, that's all we have. That's all we have to look at so far for Felix. Flip side, you know, a guy like Malik Herring, the first 2 weeks of the season played just as many snaps as Felix, and then Malik Herring unfortunately got hurt, and then he kind of was around the 15% range. So there's snaps to be had. I mean, it depends on how much you think Tershawn Warden is playing. He got a little banged up at one point, but he was, you know, hovering. I'm looking at the numbers, like hovering around 30 to 40%.
That's most of the defensive linemen. So you don't want to get into that category.
Unless your name's Derek Nnadi or Chris Jones, the two tackles, you're not, you know, Chris Jones was playing 70% plus of the snaps most weeks. Nnadi was right around 43 to 50.
So Felix getting 40% is for the whole year consistently is big.
It's only year two, so I don't want to say like just improving isn't good enough for this season. Now, if you're telling me he turns into a 40% snap guy in the defensive line, well, then you shouldn't have spent a first round pick on him. Straight up. Those guys are available everywhere, all the time, 40% on the defensive line. But for year two, it's fine.
Yeah.
For year two, it's progress. It's development. Then the expectation is prove that you deserve to be a starter on the defensive line. You deserve the third most snaps
right now,
Chris Jones and George Karloftis, whatever.
Because right now,
I mean, he wouldn't be under contract.
Yeah, right now, this is the last year for Minnehue. I know he wanted the new deal, but we'll see what he is post-injury. Most likely, this is the last year for Minnehue in Kansas City.
And Felix is, what, 21?
He's still very young. He'll be, you know, and so ideally, to your point, you're setting him up for by year three, he can get significant playing time. That's your goal at this point with where things are sitting. If we're being realistic,
and he
about,
needs to become a 6 to 8 sack, 8 to 10 sack guy. If you're a first round pick, that's what the expectation be, somewhere between 6 and 10 sacks.
So we'll see. Big year ahead, of course, for Felix, just in terms of how people are going to view him and whether the organization can count on him really a year from now. Not even for this year, but a year from now. Are they feeling good enough to count on him? Up next, though, we'll get to the 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. We'll get back to the Royals in particular and this window right now with the playoffs and how it should impact future moves. That's next here on the show.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.